there is no other way of explaining the activities of consciousness in the world. We do find consciousness in the world, do we not? That is a question of Sankhya. Therefore, this cognitive activities must be connected with Purusha. Although inactive, it is conscious. Conscious, therefore, it is capable of reflecting. Consciousness can be understood in terms of an analogy with a mirror. What is the difference between an opaque glass and a transparent, and a glass which is a mirror? Specially manufactured mirror. What is the meaning of it? By polishing. Polishing is a process of clarifying. Clarifying is a process of illumining. And that is the meaning of consciousness. All consciousness is nothing but clarity, light. Therefore, consciousness is capable of reflecting. So, Prakriti can be reflected in Purusha. The whole world, why is it that you are able to see it? Because it is being reflected in your consciousness. The moment your consciousness becomes down, unconscious, there is no reflection. The world may be existing all around, but you are not conscious of it at all. There is no reflection of the world in you. So there is no cognizance of the world at all. In sleep you don't cognize anything. So all world is cognized by the process of reflection. This is a special quality of consciousness. Consciousness means a capacity to reflect. Again, the word capacity is inconsistent because capacity is something that acts and Purusha is inactive. But once again, this is an original mystery, you might say. But such is the nature of reality. Because of this cognizance, it not only reflects the world, but it also glances at the world. This is an important subtlety. So Purusha glances. Mere reflecting Prakriti is not enough, because that will not trigger off the movement of Prakriti. There must be a glancing. The Purusha must be wanting to glance at Prakriti. In other words, must be wanting to know what is Prakriti. It is sitting side by side with Prakriti. To begin with, you may say it does not know Prakriti, or it only knows that there is something other than itself, which is unmanifest. And the moment it says, I want to know, there's a glance at it to know. Prakriti, which is entirely dependent upon this triggering, begins to manifest.
The pleasures you get out of this is also a part, because you recognize that you get the senses and the pleasures.
Right.
And how do you, it's coming from the Purusha, then how is it that it's not right to get pleasures? In the sense that you get different pleasures, different people get different pleasures out of different things.
This is the central question of Sankhya now. What question you are raising now is a central question. And it is this. By glancing at Prakriti, what happens? Purusha gets engaged in Prakriti. It's not only glancing. As Prakriti begins to manifest, it begins to get engaged in Prakriti. This engagement produces three results. By engaging in looking at it, it forgets itself. That's the first result. Secondly, it gets identified with Prakriti. And thirdly, it begins to experience the various movements of Prakriti. Self-forgetfulness, self-identification, and experiencing. The various movements of Prakriti are reflected in Purusha. And as Purusha goes on glancing, it becomes engaged in it. And this engagement has three results. You become identified with the object, or by looking at it, you become identified with it. In the meantime, you forget yourself. And you begin to experience what is in Prakriti. Prakriti is nothing but all kinds of movements, varieties, multicolored reality before you. Pleasure, pain, indifference, honor, dishonor, all kinds of experiences that are given in the world, you begin to experience. And because you are identified, you feel you are pain. You are pleasure. Instead of saying that it is different from you, because you are identified, the Purusha is identified, therefore it thinks that this pain is my pain, this pleasure is my pain. And we know that in Prakriti there is this element of egoism everywhere. And now Purusha also becomes identified with egoism. Therefore this egoism begins to be a kind of a key for Purusha. It gets hooked to this egoism and therefore not only identifies with everything as if universally, but identifies with everything individually, egoistically. So there is an egoistic identification with the movements. And it goes on. Until one day it realizes that this is intolerable, the pain, the indifference, the activity of Prakriti begins to draw upon him. It's also an experience. Because it is originally different from Prakriti, it finds this to be a burden. If it was not already different, Prakriti does not find the burden of its own manifestations. But because Purusha is basically different, therefore one day suddenly it begins to feel burden of it. It begins to react, begins to manifest its separateness from it, its difference from it. Therefore, the natural tendency of Purusha is to deal with Prakriti, to change it, to unburden itself from it, begins to feel it is imprisoned, it is bound, bondage is experienced. And from there arises in Purusha a tendency to liberate itself, also come out of it. This is called mukshatva. It wants to, there is a desire to liberate. If Prakriti were the only reality in the world, then mukshatva would not arise at all. Nobody could explain who wants to liberate. It's only somebody who is different from it wants to liberate. So the fact that there is a tendency in every human being to, at least minimum thing is to deal with the circumstance. Everybody who deals with circumstance wants to unburden himself from the circumstance, wants to be master of the circumstance, wants to sit on the top of the circumstance. That means that there is something in us which is different from circumstance. And then in this movement, it begins to find out how it can come out of this bondage. Then, among all the faculties which are produced by Prakriti, which are reflected in Purusha, and through which faculties it is able to experience all this, among these faculties it finds out there is one faculty which is capable of discrimination. That faculty not only determines and discriminates the various elements of Prakriti, but also can be utilized to discriminate between Purusha and Prakriti themselves. This buddhi, therefore, can be utilized as a means by which Purusha can know it is different from Prakriti, can realize that it is identified with Prakriti. You can be identified only when you are different from something. So, it realizes it is identified with Prakriti. And then finds that this Prakriti, this buddhi, however, is itself caught up by three gunas, by ahankara and by manas constantly. These indriyas are very powerful, senses are very powerful, they are constantly running out like horses. Now, in this movement of horses moving out constantly, you cannot discriminate easily. There is a tremendous pressure on you to act all the time, on acting. And indriyas are nothing but constant movement, overpowering movement, in fact. Senses are so dynamic. You just open your eyes, it doesn't take time for you to recognize objects. Directly it recognizes objects immediately. Such a great activity. You put something in your mouth and immediately you taste it. It doesn't take much time at all. It's so dynamic. So long as indriyas are all the time running, identification is constant. Then if you come to manas, some possibility of control is possible. For even manas is nothing but constantly driven by these forces. Only if you can do something by which some quietude is brought about in this whole movement. But because Purusha by nature is quiet, it is possible to introduce some quietude in this movement. If Purusha was not quiet by his nature, this would have never happened.